You are tuned in to a fireside chat with Zany Mystic. Join us now on another exciting metaphysical journey. Relax, tune in, drop out, and take a seat by the fire as we explore new realms and possibilities. This is Magenta Pixie. You can find me at magentapixie.weebly.com. But now, here is Zany Mystic and guest. Enjoy the show.
Greetings, and welcome to A Fireside Chat with Zany Mystic. I'm your host, Lance White. Tonight, one of my favorite guests, Julian Rose, joins us again from Poland, I believe. He might be in the United Kingdom, but he's over there in another country anyway. Julian is a champion of organic farming and a hands-on president of the International Coalition to Protect the Polish Countryside. He and his partner co-launched a highly successful campaign for a GMO-free Poland while leading a high-profile defense of peasant farmers, who he holds up as the true guardians of biodiversity throughout the world. As a result of their efforts, there are now GMO-free zones established in Poland, leading the way throughout our global community and setting the standards for what's possible. Additionally, Julian is a brilliant author and essayist. His first book is called Changing Course for Life, and his new book, In Defense of Life, Essays on a Radical Reworking of Green Wisdom, are both available at Amazon Books. You can find out more on his website, www.julianrose.info, and I do believe there might be a mirror site that we'll get him to tell you what the other sites are. So let's welcome him back to the show now. Hi, Julian. Welcome back. How are you?
Well, thank you, Lance. I'm well, yes, pretty well, I think. How's yourself?
Very well, in spite of, you know, chemtrails and GMO foods and chemicals and poison and everything else that seems to be thrown at us like, you know, food in a blender.
That's exactly it.
You know, it's really like stepping on landmines, you know. It's like you think you've got a handle on how to stay alive in this dangerous and toxic world, and then they throw you another few curves. So what about you?
Oh, I couldn't agree more. I echo your sentiment, Lance, completely. In fact, I was just thinking that what appears to be happening is that we seem to be, aside from the horrors, which you've outlined just a few of, and one could go on, of course, you know, aside from those, and they're getting worse, there seems to be a phenomenon taking place, which I can only call the simultaneity of everything. That is to say, time itself appears to be squishing into some sort of vortexian state. Now, I find keeping track of the typical issues that one needs to keep track of on a day-to-day basis in a professional world increasingly difficult. And what's more, it's becoming increasingly chaotic, and more people are making crazy mistakes. You know, accountants don't get it right. Lawyers get it wrong. All these other people are making mistakes and saying, oh, I'm sorry. Everything seems to be shifting. And that is a particularly difficult combination of things to deal with, because you've got on the one hand this evisceration of the planet by all these different elements, and at the same time you've got something happening at the cosmic plane which is pushing us all into another stage of evolution, isn't it, Lance?
No kidding. Yes, all of these things seem to be pretty well synchronized to our cosmic journey. There was a
the two things don't fit. What you might call the 9-to-5 working day and the cosmic journey are on a completely opposite path to one another.
Absolutely.
I would say that it's a time to get, I would call it, detached from the immediate reactions to the rat race, because otherwise you get literally trampled.
Oh, yeah.
It's a time to stand back, but still be involved. You know, as you said, everything's being thrown at us now. And in a certain respect, we need a steady hand on the helm.
Where
do you find that steady hand? Well, I would say you find that steady hand in your deeper self, actually, in your perhaps solar plexus region, in your meditative area where you feel this isn't me, all this craziness that's going on. It's the craziness going on, and I'm somehow detached from it. I have my own world, my rhythm, and that's connected to a deeper force. And if we can't make that disconnection, you know, one's often talking about making connections, but if one also can't make that disconnection, one is, so to speak, dragged through the 9-to-5 chaos and finds oneself more and more out of balance on the cosmic plane.
No kidding, yes. And the more the people are attached to the world of the senses, the more difficult that chaotic nodes are going to be. It's to the point where people will be self-destructing literally, because the attachments or the strings that are going into life are having to get stronger to hold people in place. It's kind of like when you go to the amusement park and there's the horses going up and down. It's kind of like somebody inside that game or that twirling thing flipped a switch, and it's going faster and faster. So those on the outside of this twirling horse thing are going to be literally thrown off, and the more they cling to being on it, the more they're going to be, torn off, whereas going to the center of that spinning object is going to allow you to kind of like going up in Dorothy's house backwards in the tornado from Kansas.
That's a very interesting description. Yes, I agree with that. It is undoubtedly true. The point being, however, that why find myself in a peculiar position in a way? Because look, I'm still the manager of a fairly large farm, in effect, a country estate in England, which I employ people to help me look after, and I am having to keep an eye on all the details to do with that element. I'm also partnered with the Jadwiga Łopata, running the International Coalition to Protect the Polish Countryside. We employ 3 staff here. And I'm doing lots of other things. And the thing is that I've just hit a point where I'm losing my steadfast secretary of 4 years. I'm looking for a new housekeeper to help look after the big old house in England, because that housekeeper's leaving. Other things are happening simultaneously to that. We're having big protests building up at this end in Warsaw, where the Farmers' Rebellion is still on, believe it or not, and so on. And somehow or other, I have to be able to keep one foot in the status quo and one foot in the elements of creative imagination and action, which go beyond it. So it isn't a question of allowing oneself to go fully in one to the other. One still has to maintain the equilibrium with a foot in each. Not easy. The other thing I was going to add to that is that we now find that almost everything we believed to be true roughly 10 years ago, if not 15 years ago, is in the virtually mainstream being admitted to being actually the case. Now, one of those elements is to do with GMO, and it's to do with glyphosate, you know, which is Roundup, which I'm sure you're very familiar with. You spray your weeds with it in your garden, and you remove everything, including your daisies, etc. And in agriculture, it's the most widely used herbicide in the world by far. But it's now being finally admitted, even by the World Health Organization, that it probably causes cancer. Can you imagine that? The World Health Organization admit that it's probably causing cancer, which means it's definitively causing cancer, obviously. And in fact, its low levels of glyphosate have been found in human urine and been found to promote the growth of human breast cancer cells. And that's by the Institute of Science and Society, an organization based in London. And then you've got other people like this lady from MIT, Christina Saric, who's been saying aluminium and glyphosate specifically interrupt the workings of the pineal gland, leading to high rates of autism. How about that? And interestingly, she's adding aluminium to glyphosate. Now, does that ring a bell, Lance?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you just opened the door because we over here in the United States have mandatory fluoride addition to our tap water, which is something that Hitler's armies and generals, you know, did in Germany, as you well know, and many people know, to destroy or suppress the pineal gland. And isn't it funny that the chemtrails are largely made up of aluminum or aluminium and barium and strontium and bacteria and many other things? And the really scary thing is, if you imagine it, if they can dump all of these chemicals in our air 24 hours a day all over the world, it's Paris and England and where you are and here, and nobody's putting up enough of a resistance to even get the governments to admit that it's going on, it's not even a word in the dictionary, chemtrails, then we are in big trouble because they could put anything in there. You know, diseases and nanotech. In fact, it is documented that there is nanotechnology being dumped in there. And because people became aware of the move to microchip everybody, even though they're still doing that, they're doing it with pets and babies and military, and now corporations are starting to force or encourage the convenience of mandatory chipping, because you'll get more goodies. You'll have access to this and access to that, and you can just wave your hand over the copy machine and things like that. You know, secret doors that go into, you know, the plush rooms. So it's being done, and it's the fascist tiptoe, as David Icke says. So if they can do all that and we still are not putting up a big fight, we're unconsciously consenting to it.
Well, that is so correct. And this has been my big bugaboo for years now, the issue of the the consent. And it is consent. You know, if you don't take action for something and you remain silent, you consent to the status quo. And what you're referring to is the status quo. It's the way the status quo operates, actually. What we're really witnessing, I think, is a global centralization of power. And all these different things, if you like, are like spokes coming out of that hub. And they're all, if you like, pointing into that hub. So you've got people in all these top professions, corporations, that have a similar dream, actually, which is to maintain and hold total power. Mm-hmm. So total power over the food chain, total power over the pharmaceutical industry, total power over the energy supply sector, total power over the communication sector, just six corporations owning the world's press, for instance. And there you have it, you know, in that 0.5 or 1% of people who have made it their duty to be masters of the planet, we have the puppeteers of the rest of humanity. And it is an incredible thing, because we've had this sort of conversation on and off the last 5 years, and there are hundreds of people having this conversation on and off for the last 5 years, and actually more and more every day, as you know. But nevertheless, there still seems to be a culpability gap between talking about it and taking actions to bring about change, which should be happening basically on an absolutely daily basis, involving always millions of people, I believe.
Yes, I agree with you, because we have the power when we take responsibility for it, but we don't have the power when we talk out of the left side of our mouths and then watch television at night with commercials and drink beer and do things that are unconscious, But those are okay because, you know, we justify our unconscious behavior. But when you really step up to the plate and start looking at all of this, you need, there's a necessity to be responsible for all of it.
That's really true. Now, one of the things that I've been very preoccupied by recently, in fact, I've just completed an article about it about half an hour before you called, is the Large Hadron Collider in near Zurich in Switzerland. That is the, you will remember, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I think it was 3 years ago possibly, this is a massive atom-smashing test tube set up, which is about 36 kilometers long and cost about $700 billion to establish over a period of 20 to 30 years. And what they do is they hurl atoms at each other down these tubes at the speed of light to get a massive smash up. And then they peer at this smash up on the computer screens, and they've been searching for something called the Higgs boson. Now, the Higgs boson is the other name for it is the God particle. And the God particle is an elementary particle of physics in the universe, which so far has eluded the scientific examination because it doesn't. They can't see it. They don't know what it is. So they think that they can find God by smashing atoms into each other at the speed of light. Now, the amazing thing is that this has already happened on last year, and they think they found the Higgs boson, but they're not entirely sure whether they did. So what are they doing now? Okay, I'll tell you what they're doing now. They decided that they want to make this machine even more energetic, which means tripling the amount of energy from the smash-up which tried to show them a Higgs boson to a level which is equivalent to very, very, very high levels of frequencies and power output, which you'd find at a universal level, basically. Mm-hmm. And they're going to try and create black holes. That is going to be a very important scientific experience, because if they can figure out how to make black holes, they probably will understand a lot more about how the universe works. But
right.
get it only a tiny bit wrong. You know, you only have to be out by a fraction of a millimeter in when you're playing with this sort of energy, and the whole thing could virtually evaporate. I should say it will create a black hole, and things will get sucked into that black hole, including the collider itself and its staff and Zurich and Switzerland and the rest of Europe and the Atlantic Ocean and the mountains and America.
Uh-huh.
And it's really possible because the laws of physics say that a black hole, once it's created, has enormous inverse power, you know, to suck in and destroy everything that's on the outside. It's the opposite of how you describe the horses on the fairground. You know, it's the opposite. It's the implosion as opposed to explosion.
Yes, yeah.
So I'm preoccupied about this because I read a scientific report and saying that it has already been proved that the use of this machine has caused earthquakes and volcanic disturbances all around the world. And that was when they were looking for the Higgs boson. Now they're going to crank it up to 3 times the power. And by July, they're going to have a crack at creating black holes.
Mm.
So what's that going to do to our planet?
Well, you know, I have a lot of different sources for information. And I have been told that this is another one of those things that is not, you know, not everything is what it seems to be.
Yep.
And there's a couple of things about this that I think are interesting, that this is very similar to when scientists were experimenting with the atom bomb, and you can see what happened with that. But above and beyond that, these are forces that are attempting to open a stargate prior to the permanent close of that stargate, and that is about 1 year or so away from us. And if they can do that, then their forces can enter into our universe. and all kinds of things can go on. And then they're also working on parallel realities, kind of similar how, to the way that people who promote astral dreams, going into the astral realms and so on. But this is a physical manifestation or opening of those realms. And so they're working on all kinds of metaphysical and unusual experimentation in addition to that. And it is not, there's a public persona to the Hadron Collider, and there's a very personal private one that works on many levels with military, with the black operations, and with various off-world ETs, and especially the reptilians, who have pretty much have their hooks into this world by now. And it's very similar to the movie Hellboy. You remember that movie where he... I mean, it's almost like a Hellboy is like a documentary that's talking about the Stargate, and it was brought forth in Nazi Germany. And these experiments have continued on. They never stopped because, you know, Project Paperclip, blah, blah, blah. And there's even, I have a very good source that told me that there's a larger collider being built now. They tried to do it in Japan, and they couldn't get it fast enough. So I don't know where it's located. I just know that they are working on a larger collider. So they don't destroy the world with this one. They'll get another opportunity when the big one goes off.
That is right, something. Now, I very much sympathize with this position that you're describing. You know what swung me particularly on it? I noticed that the preparations for the build-up to trying to create these black holes started on Easter Day.
Oh, yeah.
It was actually announced, you know, in the press, laconically, like casually. And Easter Day is a Sunday. Most people aren't working on that day. Secondly, Easter Day is renowned for being a metaphor for the rising of the spirit into the higher dimension, you know?
Mm-hmm.
When supposedly Jesus Christ, after he died, if he did, disappeared for a day or two, and then he was found to have disappeared, and the ascension to heaven happened on Easter Day. Well, you can take this symbolically, but we don't have to take it literally, that event. And it's undoubtedly a pagan ritual originally, and it's to do with the rites of spring, I believe. So what you've got is, on the day of the year, which is the most important day for Western society with a spiritual and religious interest, you've got someone starting a machine intending to create black holes. Now, you see, here you have a completely dark scenario, as far as I'm concerned, and I would say Masonic as well.
Illuminati, Masonic. At this point, they all kind of lump together because they're collapsing. It's like all of the corporations are buying up, you know, the other corporations, and at some point, there's nowhere to go, and so then those large corporations start collapsing into the military and into the various reptilian and other forces, and they start merging, and that's where I see the problem is going to be, because there are a lot of us that don't want to merge with that kind of negative energy, which has no respect for life. And which has been destroying the planet and human life and all life since the beginning of time.
Indeed it has. And here you have a very, very important consideration, which is that I believe the reason why the planet is still here is partially because man attempts to intervene and to stop or to practice a way of life which is different from one we're describing, partially. But I would say, unfortunately, in a way, or sadly, you might even want to say, more frequently, it's by divine intervention. And I think when these machines fail to work at the energy levels that are required, or that they take much longer to come about with practice their experiments than they intended, it's because there has been divine intervention on the planet. And the planet Earth is considered to be an extremely valuable and important planet within the universe as a whole. It's associated with the record-keeping of the universe itself, the Akashic records even. And therefore, everything everything that happens is somehow related in the universe through Earth, almost like a radio transmitter.
Yeah, right.
What I think is happening is Earth is really in the spotlight now, because there are probably, if one can let one's imagination soar a little bit, there are probably thousands of different extraterrestrial planetary interests in preserving and evolving planet Earth in the direction which is the true one. And all of them are hovering around out there somewhere, millions of miles out, thousands of miles out, and whatever, on the Earth itself, unseen, all looking for a pathway for mankind which can overcome this black force element. And the black force element is itself building up to a sort of climactic position. So then you can understand why people talk about apocalypse, you know, apocalyptic.
Oh, yes.
And that is it. We are in that apocalyptic time.
Yes, we are. We are in that. And, you know, one of the things that was called to my attention recently, it just came out on the in the underground news here, or the actually it's underground / mainstream now, is that starting April 20th, which is Hitler's birthday, U.S. troops will start training the troops of Ukraine's battalions. Yeah. And there's an article on that in Dissident Voice, which is a radical newsletter in the struggle for peace and social justice, and it goes into the details about what we and probably many in the EU partners are doing to place Hitler's Nazi Fourth Reich recreation of itself into the Ukraine. So it's not the Russians that are the bad guys here, really. And there are no good guys or bad guys. That's another fallacy that we fall for, like Democrats and Republicans.
Yeah.
Everything in duality is an illusion, and it's maintained by language and belief systems. So, but this is going on right under our noses, you know, I mean, it's obvious.
Well, it's very true. Here I am, as you correctly said, in Poland, you know, we're about 200 or 300 miles from the Ukraine border.
Oh, my goodness.
We're right there on the edge of the hot seat now. Poland has been absolutely taken over by the purveyors of the wrong message.
Right.
And what we've had is Putin being put across as the most vile and distrusted individual on the planet. Polish troops are preparing themselves that Russia will undoubtedly invade Poland. People who once involuntary armies that were called together to protect the homeland against the Nazis have been called out again and being told to train, you know, in villages and things all over the place. So, you know, this propaganda machine has gone into 200%, and it's spreading the word that the old enemy, you know, our neighbor that caused us such problems at various points in history, and they did, there's no doubt about that, is on the warpath again. We need NATO, we need America, we need the troops back on the ground here in Poland, and we must all get prepared for the worst. That is absolutely everybody is saying it, Lance. It's a horrible experience because I don't believe a word of it. Mm-hmm. I get onto occasional alternative radio programs like yours in Poland, and I say this is a lot of lies, and I try and explain the background to the whole thing. And I said, what do you want? You know, you want Americans to come in here? That country that has bombed 30 countries since the Second World War, you know, has bigger ambitions than any other country in the world to be the new colonial leader, has produced Monsanto's, GMOs, glyphosate, and almost everything you don't write, has Coca-Colaized the water system in the world, etc. And this is who you want to come defend you against a country that has no such record. It's not a great empire-building colonizer at all, Russia. It's barely strayed out of its own boundaries. So, you know, there is an awful lot of irrational fear floating around, and that's what makes things so difficult.
Oh, yes. Well, you know, at what point do we, at what point, you know, these things are set in motion and history repeats itself, as you know. And especially when you are dealing with the masses that unconsciously go on, la-di-da-di-da, you know, I'm living my life, you know, going to the Beverly Hills salon and flying to France and this and that and the other thing, or even just having a mundane life and drinking beer and having pizza with the boys. These are the people that are asleep, the unawakened masses, and fortunately, there are growing numbers of us that are reigniting our own spirit and connecting with the beautiful forces of nature and tending to our own garden, our inner garden and the garden around us. And I don't see that we can really do too much about forces that are going, that are determined to destroy everything. I'm withdrawing from all of my interest in the Matrix and the conspiracies and the rest of it, because it's just going to go on and on and on, and they're all hooks that catch us, and everything is designed to ensnare us, know, because it works out of fear, and it triggers the emotional and instinctive centers to react, like, oh my God, I got to do something about this, and that keeps us unbalanced. Seems like a remaining balanced and calm at the zero point field within the core is probably a wise thing, because there nothing moves. It's all still.
Yes. Now, my view, as you know, is always that you balance yourself here. This is what I was saying at the beginning. Yep. You make sure this is what I call the detachment process to maintain your level of equilibrium from that position. But I'm a fighter, and I'm not afraid to say it. And it's therefore I say you have to be the warrior at the simultaneous time. Now, all the greatest warriors in civilization always also fought from that position, you know? They weren't just bloodthirsty rogues. They are actually rather high-minded people. And I think that the critical mass factor of people, of numbers who, if they were awake, aware, and in action, could stop things like the Large Hadron Collider and could prevent the destruction of Ukraine, etc. You know, this could all be done, but you have to start from that position that you describe. So I was rather careful not to say, I'm just withdrawing into that position. What I say is, I'm withdrawing into that position. I'm also agreement with you that we're tending our garden, and actually very literally so, in Poland and in England, of course. But at the same time, we're going out there where we can lend impetus to positive change and defend our area against intrusion by those who would further destroy it. So, you know, there's a practical element of the modern form of the word fight. It doesn't mean to go out and stab someone or shoot someone. You know, it's more the word put in the context of a spiritual fight to save the planet. So on that level, you might be intrigued to hear that we've been working with farmers in Poland for a long time, but we've recently got much closer to the sort of core group of farmers in the north of Poland who are trying to fight the government, who are selling off prime Polish farmland to the highest foreign bidders. So that the farmers and the farmers' children will have no land to grow their crops on in the future if they can't stop the government selling all their land off overseas. So we've got involved with these people, an excellent group of farmers, very, very down to earth, very thoughtful, kind people, but also very determined to save their land and against land grabbing, as it's called. What we've done is we've added to their agenda, which is pretty public, and the media in Poland know about it, the two elements. One is stop GMO, make the law which bans GMO into a proper law passed by Parliament, because the current one, which we fought so hard for in Poland, never went through Parliament. It went through a sort of route which avoided having to be voted on. So in other words, they could fiddle it and change it whenever they want. So that's the second point after land grabs. And the third point is even more interesting in a way. It's about legal food. Now, in Poland, all the best farmhouse foods that are processed in the farmhouse or on the farm are illegal to buy. You can't sell them. The reason that is been some regulatory obsession which has said that you have to have a separate building, you have to have proper tiles, you have to have a concrete floor, you have to have it registered, etc. Now, a peasant farmer in Poland or a small farmer in Poland with about an acre, 2 or 3 acres of land, hasn't got any money to do all those things. Yet they're producing them some of the most delicious food in Europe, you know?
Oh, yes.
So consequently, most of this goes through the black market. People just come and get it, and people do it, and they just hope they won't get caught. But nevertheless, the scandal is that all that food is basically illegal, whereas the supermarket junk food, the lifeless, tasteless, energy-less stuff that comes from all over the world is legal, and everyone can go off to Tesco and buy it, or Walmart. We haven't got Walmart in Poland yet. And you see, so we've added that as the third point. And what we've done is we've helped the farmers form a little place called Green City, right opposite the Prime Minister's residence in central Warsaw, a little camp. And, excuse me, in that camp, we now have lectures, talks, cinema shows, slideshows, etc., promoting all these issues that we're defending. And we invite every 2 weeks the Prime Minister to come and join us. And you know what? She hasn't. I wonder why.
Yeah. The prime rib roast.
That's it.
Yeah.
So basically, you know, we've got in with these farmers and we've set up what you might call a little symbol of resistance.
Nice.
And you know, Poland was famous for the resistance movement. In the Second World War, 2,000 or 3,000 Poles held off 20,000 Nazi soldiers for almost 1 year.
Wow.
And they fought from the sewers, they fought from lofts and attics. They didn't think anything of getting out there and getting killed. They were just fighting for their survival and for the life of their country.
Well,
and this has been
what?
Poland's history for the last 200 years.
They're going to do it again.
Every country has eventually been forced back. So what you do have in this country is a remarkable level of resistance. And I believe that in farming and in management of the land, you have the most fundamental survival instinct.
Yeah.
And I don't think that people on our planet are going to be able to really survive purely on spiritual air. I think they're going to have to also learn that you're going to need the land and the plants, and you're going to need to work with them, for them,
and
grow your own food. So actually, I don't think there's much option for the future of humanity other than to put those two things together. You might even say agriculture and the spirit must be joined.
Right, that's heaven and earth uniting.
That's it?
Yeah, that really is it. And I'm doing that on the microcosmic level here on my little ranch. And I purchased or actually donated to a friend of mine, Ann Creel Camp. Her son invented a thing called the Garden Tower. And it is an absolutely amazing small device that rotates on ball bearings. And you can plant, I think there are about 50 slots, and you build it in tiers. And in the center is a core where you put your organic waste from cooking, and it goes in and breaks down and feeds the soil. And it's all self-contained. The tea goes in the bottom, and you recirculate. It's like we are self-contained, only we eliminate our fluids where the Romans collected them and recirculated them and used them in beauty products and anti-aging things. Well, they're doing that now. The porta-potties collect all of our urine, and they sell it to big companies that use it. So, but everything seems to repeat itself. So it looks like you guys in Poland that was just practice run. The 20,000 soldiers, that was just the appetizer. Now we're getting ready for the big event. And you guys have got your hands full, so I really feel for you. And we've got our hands full over here, too. But look at what we're doing. In this moment, you and I and thousands and millions of others, at least in spirit, are linking up together. And we are creating a network, a global and cosmic network of light. And that is going to rise above like cream rising to the top. This is my idea, and probably a lot of others too. It's going to rise above, and we will be able to see where others may not have as much of an ease of seeing, and we will be united in spirit and standing together rather than against.
Indeed, yes, that is the way it's going. I often refer to the concept of the ark, you know, like Noah's ark, because we'll be building arcs. And we are building arcs, in fact, both on the physical and on the spiritual plane. And we will have to open our doors of those arcs to people who are unfortunately going to be swept up in ways that they can't even foresee at the present time, but are good people. You know, we have the element of compassion to consider. Because it's easy to slip into a selfish element here and think, okay, good, you know, we're going to be the sort of the floating protected ones, and we will understand what's going on, and we will therefore be above the fray. But in reality, you know, the stories of the great leaders of society and the great gurus always point us back to being compassionate to our neighbors and our friends and other nationalities who are struggling. You know, we are in the position of having to pit ourselves back into this phenomena and do our best to hold up our flag in there so that people who need us come to our side. And then we bring them back to our arcs, I think, and help them to restore themselves and to put themselves on a path which is going to lead beyond this mess. Because in one way, I'm rather a believer in the theory that we chose our destinies, or let's say we chose our parents. You know, when you think back about your parents, it seems a bit shocking sometimes. Nevertheless, you know, there was a reason. And someone once told me, who looked at my past lives, they said, that's interesting. They said, you spent a long time wondering whether you were going to come back or not.
Interesting.
In a way, you see, what we already knew, or I already knew, that I was going to come back to something which is going to be very hard work.
Yeah.
I probably knew enough to know I was going to come back into the fray again. And I think we always have to go back into the fire over and over again. Eventually, maybe, we get honed down by the fire to something which is so pure that we get a choice. That we say, okay, I'm not coming back to this particular planet again next time round. I'm going on duty somewhere else in the universe. And that might not be our decision, of course, but we might have a say in it.
Right. And it does seem to have something to do with the purification process, and the kind of like the mountain squeezing coal to form a diamond. Is what it feels like to me, and I'm on my ninth life, and I'm ready to cycle off, but I'm discovering that I still have a lot to do, and that it requires moment-to-moment presence, and you know, and especially presence to the messages that come from life itself. And I know you know what I'm talking about. Everything is communicating, and it's right under our noses. And it's not in the past or in the future, it's in the now.
In the now. And the point there, I think it was very well, you put it very well, is that it's almost like the expression, freedom is every second. You know, you have to keep your eye on the ball. And if you find yourself drifting away, well, at least at our point in life, you can say, I'm drifting away. Come back. Before you got to the point where you knew you were drifting away, you simply did drift away. And with a bit of luck, something gave you a kick in the butt, you know, about 6 months later, and you're, where have I been? Oh, my God, you know. What a waste of energy that was.
Right.
So we have the wisdom possibly now, and so do certain people who are younger and who are just advancing quickly along that road, to be able to call yourself up, if you pull yourself up and say, I feel I'm going off track. Now, that is a vital, valuable tool, is it not?
Oh, yes, absolutely. That is really the secret of navigating life's choppy waters, observing oneself from an impartial perspective and noticing the thoughts that come up, because there are so many different desires that, the instincts want one thing and your emotions want another, and program beliefs want something else, and it's a constant, it's a zoo in there, and I'm noticing that the alchemical process is really partially an aspect of noticing one's thoughts and then seeing and knowing where they're going. You know, I've done that before.
Yes.
You know, that's a recurring cycle. I know how it ends, and it doesn't... Everything seems in life seems to end the same way. It's meaningless and has no substance to it. And so that keeps me turning in a direction of looking maybe towards the sun as a metaphor for the source of light and heat and everything else. And there's always a larger game. We can't conceive of it because our minds are not capable of understanding or comprehending the bigger pictures that exist, but they're there.
You get something very interesting coming up there. I know we're running out of time. Look, it's amazing, isn't it, when we get going, how time speeds up even more. I was saying at the very beginning of the program that time's speeding up. Now I find we've almost come to the end and we're just beginning.
Right.
So I was just thinking out loud about Carlos Castaneda, who... I was looking rereading a lot of his stuff. I think, you know, I might have mentioned it on a previous program over the last 2 or 3 years. And I found that he called this invasion of thoughts, which are not the ones, which are the true self. He called that a foreign installation.
Right.
No, but that's pretty, pretty deep, because a foreign installation
is
indeed the dark side's creation. You might even call it the devil. It's the thing that's supposed to keep us preoccupied so that we don't get back to the real self. And
that's
so long
as
we are preoccupied and not able to get back to the real self, the world can still be controlled and managed centrally by the dark side. So he was right. It is a foreign installation, and it's quite useful to think of it that way, I think.
Oh, it's absolutely brilliant. And, of course, the Matrix trilogy that presented it it's like a documentary, but I love Castaneda, and I too have been rereading some of that material, because he also says that shamans are able to that everything is created through an assemblage point.
Yes,
and we don't have time to get into that today, but maybe on our next show we can delve a little more deeply into the mystical aspects of the assemblage point, because shamans can literally turn within themselves, and there's a new point of assembly or assemblage of light that comes from the body, and you're literally like a lighthouse. You've shifted your position, and you are in another dimension. So,
that's right.
That
I read that piece too. It's fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah.
I love
that.
It is very remarkable. Now, you know, the shamanic element is the sort of powers that we need to... We shouldn't dispel this and think, oh, that's old hat stuff, or these shamans, etc. There's a wealth of material in there still, which I think we need on our navigation of the choppy waters.
Yeah.
And we can combine with the more mystical elements.
Yeah.
I doubt very much that any of us sort of Western-born and bred individuals will ever make it to true shamanic status, but we can nevertheless draw upon some of the extremely valuable experiences that the shamans have put in writing or spoken, as in the case of Carlos Castaneda, speaking through his pupil, you know, who then kept a very strict record of all this stuff, and pore over it and see what is still true about the way we go about our daily lives, and how we can also use certain elements of shamanic teaching to help us gain not only the powers but the courage, I think, he talks a lot about courage. He says at the very end of the active side of infinity, to make it really work, you need guts of steel.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, speaking of guts of steel, a really wonderful person came up here to my little ranch and gave me a personal demonstration of his shamanic instruments. And he has been working with Peruvians and so on and collecting instruments for 20 or 30 years. And he just brought up a handful, which was about 30 different things, including these huge bronze gongs made in Germany that are keyed to the different planets. And they are, he gave us an experience that took us out of this world. And it was in the now. So, you know, we can read and study, and that's important. But I found myself transported to these other worlds by Michael Knisley. And he's now performing up in Mount Shasta. And it's, I've recorded it on film, so if I figure out how to upload it, I'll do that. But I just wanted to get that in before we, you know, we run out of time again. You know, I'm going to have to throw the hat to you because it's your show, really. And I want people to know how to find out more about your work, and we've got a couple of minutes for you to do that.
Well, yes, I will. And I was just going to end by saying, really, that, you know, I spent about 10 years of my life in experimental theater working with artists. And actually, the element of being an artist is very, very close, if not the same, really, as the true spiritual path. And the need for human beings to express their creativity in the form of theater, in the form of music, in the form of dance, in the form of singing, you know, is critical. And we must do it. And, you know, this is what counteracts the deadness of the 9-to-5 working day. Yeah. And eventually we must surpass the 9-to-5 working day and allow ourselves to form a totally new society based on the rhythms of the planets and on the rhythms of nature and the rhythms of man's creativity, and nothing to do with the pseudo-capitalistic, communistic world that's been pushed upon us all over the last centuries. And on that note, Lance, yeah, sure. Well, you know, I think people probably realize that I'm a mixed bag. I'm a farmer, I'm an actor. In fact, I'm putting on a play in a few days' time in support of the farmers, a story which I'm going to do all in mime with farmers acting in it about the land grabs, and we're going to do it right in the center of Warsaw. And so, you know, that's my theater side is going to be coming to the foreground then. Then I'm rushing back to get the plants in because spring is here, and I'm on my little tractor rushing up and down the fields today, harrowing the ground, preparing that. At the same time, I'm doing these sort of interviews and I'm writing, and I'm trying to manage a country estate in England. That sounds like enough for about 5 lifetimes, doesn't it?
At least. Well, you know, conscious beings walk the earth, and Shakespeare, whoever that was, used those mediums, whether it was a collective working together.
And I've had this, joy of my life is being able to understand and feel that they're interconnected. People used to say to me, how could you possibly be an experimental theater actor and then a farmer? You know, you couldn't have more opposite scenario. And I say, you got it wrong. They're completely connected. But that's another story and another show.
Yes. Well, you are one of the most phenomenal people walking the earth today, in my personal opinion. And we're going to have to just to schedule another show. That's all there is to it.
Excellent.
Would you let people know where they can find you and also find out more about these events and what you're doing, which is so fascinating?
Well, yes, people can. Actually, our main website is in Polish, unfortunately. We simply can't find the time to get it all in English. So I'm talking about the International Coalition to Protect the Polish Countryside, but that you can find at www.icppc.pl, and it will tell you some in English, at least. And then on my website is julianrose.pl. And on going onto that, you'll see a lot of the things that I've been up to over the last 10 or 20 years. And you'll also have the opportunity to read about my books. Changing Course for Life was the first one, and In Defense of Life, the most recent one, which really are a series of essays running along lines that we've been discussing tonight. You probably find something that suits you in those two books, and I would be delighted if you decided to purchase them.
Well, I love your books, Julian, and I can't thank you enough for coming back and sharing your wonderful experiences with the world. And, you know, you have my deep gratitude.
Well, Lance, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. We're kindred spirits, and sometimes you threaten to come over here, and if you ever do, I hope you take the route which is the out-of-body route rather than getting onto an airplane, because I think they're becoming a bit of a dangerous proposition now.
I think I read your mind, and I kind of decided to do it that way. Well, thank you, my friend.
That's the thing. And that's yet another show, that all those horrors with aeroplanes. But never mind. They're still the safest form of travel, so don't worry, folks. You've got a few more years yet before they're all grounded.
Wonderful. Thanks again, Julian. We'll talk again soon.
All the best.
All right. Good night.